Hello and welcome to the Deep Sea Podcast, Pressurized, a short, punchy version of our main feed that gets right to the scientific point. If you like what you hear and you'd like to hear the full episode, you can find it in the same feed. And now, to get right to the point. We've got a few listener questions we could touch upon, and somebody asked, how did we meet and start working together? Which is quite an interesting story.
Congo, West Africa.
I was working with a marine survey company doing environmental surveys, usually before sort of oil and gas development. So you check what the habitat was beforehand. You would uphold the environmental legislation and basically monitor that it wasn't too badly damaged with the bit of work that had to be done. So that was my old hat at the time. But I wanted to get back into sort of research. Like I wanted to go out into the real world a little bit. I thought that would grow me up really well. And it was a really tough life, so it did. But I wanted to come back into academia. Alan came on board with, it was the Robio Lander at the time, yep. As one of the survey devices. We got on really well anyway. It was great fun working together. And I really fell for the lander system because even though I'd had an interest in the deep sea, it had always been classically those trawled up specimens and not seeing the animals in their right light. And then suddenly there was this device that was really low impact. It was really easy to deploy and recover. And then you got to see the animals in life in these really beautiful pictures. And it was sort of showing me the deep sea in a way I'd never seen it before. And so I just loved that as a method. Especially because you didn't have to kill anything and you got all this great data. So yeah, we just sort of got on really well. And that was the opportunity to get back into academia and started working with deep sea corals then was the first step into getting deeper and deeper.
It was a fun job, that one. I think on that data you're talking about, I still think those photos off West Africa are some of the best deep sea photos I've ever taken. I mean, they're scientifically, they're fine as well, but I mean, they're just beautifully framed. It's like they were all the fish were behaving and just sort of nicely framing themselves and that. They were great. Unfortunately, most of them have never really seen the light of day. I think some of the sharky ones, the Portuguese dogfish ones, have been in various magazines and stuff like that because they're quite good. But most of them don't see the light of day, and that's in part because I personally have never been very good at submitting these things to online repositories, and that's a thing that's becoming more and more popular these days. I think we are going to go down that route in one way or another. It's incredibly valuable, I think, because certainly in the business we're in, it's taxonomic drawing of an animal gives you a certain amount of information, but most of the time, you don't have the privilege of having the animal in a controlled environment where you're actually making measurements that you can compare to a taxonomic description, right? You've basically got a video of something or an image of something, and it's really, really, really useful to compare that to as many images as you can that other people have taken. I came up recently, actually. We had a paper submitted, and we had a picture of the animal in the paper, and one of the reviewers said, you've got to take that picture out, because unless it's a taxonomic drawing, it's just a pretty picture and it doesn't mean anything. And they actually made us take it out in the end.
Really? I really disagree with that.
If I read a paper on an animal, I'd like to see a picture of it. And it also means that, you know, this is species A. This is what it looked like at this particular point in time. And this is what we're referring to it as. And over time, is, let's say there's 100 papers published on that. There is that sort of visual record of what that thing looked like, which I think is incredibly valuable, and not just saying, well, we don't have to show a picture of it because you've named it.
Well, there's two elements. There's like, just trust us. No one can then check your ID.
Yeah, because there has been cases where we've got it wrong and someone else has got it wrong, and you look back on something 10 years later and you go, hang on, that species number 3 or whatever it is, that's probably not that now, because we've gathered up more and more images. And once you get those big libraries going, it's easier to contextualize what you're working on at that point, right? So anyway, the point is that these big image archives, repositories are actually becoming really, really useful. So you need to find someone who knows all about this.
Well, one of these collaborative repositories that is emerging very recently, and one I've been keeping an eye on, is FathomNet. So it's coming out of Mbari, the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute. It's an open source image database, and you can search by species or even sort of substrate and different types of litter and things like that. There's a few extra interesting categories in there when I was having a mooch through there. And by location, and you can find labeled and geolocated images of the critters you're interested in. And this is useful in itself. Say a researcher wants to see where this species has been seen before. If they want to validate their identification, if they want to see, you know, this from different angles. And as Alan was touching upon with the taxonomic illustrations, a lot of these deep sea critters, they look so different in life and in situ than they do when they're trawled up, which is often how the taxonomic illustrations come about. These databases, as we get more visual, as we tend to take pictures of things rather than trawl them up, are getting more and more important. So this is already enough. This is already like super useful to the community. But anyone tech savvy is going to notice that loads and loads of painstakingly labeled images of something from all sorts of different angles in all sorts of different conditions is exactly what you need to train a machine learning algorithm. And then things get exciting. Doing things we've never done before, basically, like a bit of a technology renaissance. So really exciting field that I am very excited to talk to someone about. And I have managed to secure FathomNet co-founder, Kakani Khatija. She is a bioengineer at the BioInspired Lab at Embari, also a visiting professor of aerospace. She's a Natural Geographic explorer and a former USA ice dancer, I noticed in her portfolio as well. And she was really, really good to come on the show. Kakani, thank you so much for coming on to have a chat with us.
Thank you, Tom, for inviting me. I'm really excited to be here.
So just to begin with, can you introduce us to FathomNet?
Right. So FathomNet is a database, essentially, that contains labeled data. And when I mean labeled data, I mean imagery and associated metadata that people can use to know what they're looking at in an underwater image. What we're trying to do is contain or collect information on all of the life that lives within the ocean to provide a resource so that people can either learn, understand, or even strive to find new life that we've perhaps already observed, you know, using a number of different imaging platforms or expeditions. And so really the goal of FathomNet is to connect the ocean community and share that visual data that they already have so that we can enrich it and get valuable information out of it.
Even at its very superficial sort of primary level, it is an incredibly useful resource, and it gets our sporadic scattered data together, looking through some of the data, like multiple platforms. I'm seeing baited landers, I'm seeing autonomous vehicles and even some sub stuff as well. There's a massive variety of data in here.
And to your point, I mean, that's what we really hope FathomNet will become to the community. I mean, we did a beta launch of the database, either late September or October. And so we're airing all of our dirty laundry, right? Because we want people to see the potential here. Right now, the data that's in FathomNet has been seeded by existing data sets that we were able to access. So for example, Embari's video annotation reference system, the NOAA's Okeanos Explorer, the ROV Deep Discoverer database, as well as the National Geographic Society's like drop camera systems. And these are also partners in the FathomNet project. And using that labeled data that already exists in these databases, we were able to ingest them into FathomNet. And really, it's kind of this initial demonstration of what we can do with something like FathomNet, which can host distributed labeled data. So if you are a researcher in the UK, or if you're a researcher in Japan or South Africa, and you have labeled data, FathomNet can aggregate that information and then make it available to anyone who wants to use it.
At least in the last decade, maybe the last 20 years, we've had a real deep sea renaissance almost. Certainly in the extreme depths, we're going back again. And it feels like there's been a big shift in the form of our data. And now it's almost exclusively visual. Most of our data is visual currently. Mm-hmm. So what's the current bottleneck in understanding the deep ocean now that we're getting all this visual data?
The biggest bottleneck, and you know, the marine imaging community will totally unanimously agree with me on this, is actually processing that information, right? Turning pixels into actual data points like animal names, concepts, abundances, densities, right? And then making that available to researchers or management institutions, et cetera. So it's processing that information, converting visual data to something that can be useful for researchers is the massive bottleneck that the community is facing.
And I think that might be surprising to the sort of average listener who maybe doesn't work in marine science, is that footage of the deep sea, we talk about how rare that is and what an opportunity that is. But actually, our bottleneck is processing it. There's more video and images than there are skilled people who can turn that into data and turn that into something usable. The tragedy of that is that within a certain project's funding or within just the interest of the research group that's working with it, mm-hmm. there's actually a lot of data that's lost, that's wasted because nobody has the time to really process it.
Well, absolutely. And then, I mean, there's the time, but then there's also the expertise. Like you mentioned, a lot of labs or a lot of groups hire volunteers or interns or graduate students to process visual data. But for a particular question, like something about maybe fish distributions or coral distributions, the focus then is then on those groups. But the challenge, right, is visual data is so rich with information. You know, you've got entire communities that you can be characterizing with that same data set. And so, you know, one, having that expertise to be able to identify everything in visual data is extremely hard. Never mind that we really haven't supported taxonomy communities, right? I mean, that's unfortunately a community that is really impacted and has changed a lot. And it's that input that we desperately need and need to figure out a way, right, to leverage that expertise and share it more broadly. I want to make sure to make the point that I don't see this ever replacing taxonomy or the need for taxonomists. I think it's a mechanism that we can use to potentially enrich that community and bolster that community, because without their input, something like this will never be successful. Yeah.
Their skill set is absolutely crucial to the work we do. We cannot interpret these animals that we're looking at without their decoding of what we're really seeing. Mm-hmm. Part of the worry would be that this would almost be a digital replacement for them, but I really don't feel that's the case. You know, if that was the case, then they should also never write a book or never publish a paper, because that's them imparting that knowledge on others. Mm-hmm. They're very much a part of this solution, aren't they?
Absolutely. And I think you do make an interesting point that there's a number of different ways to share knowledge. But to be frank, like for Fathomit to be successful, we absolutely rely on taxonomists or parataxonomists to be providing accurate information or contributing to FathomNet directly. You know, for example, there's a huge community of individuals that watch ROV dives that are on the internet or live streamed. And this community of people, I mean, they're just so amazing and phenomenal. And they, over time, have really enlisted the help and the input of professional taxonomists, like, what is this squid? Let's tweet out to this person. Let's get this information. Yeah. And we'll get an ID on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
Like in somewhere hidden in a YouTube chat. Now, I'm not saying that that isn't fantastic, but then what happens to that YouTube comment? It doesn't go into a database anywhere. It contributes to knowledge, but it isn't packaged in a way that it can be shared more broadly or accessed more broadly. And so that's something that we're really trying to address with FathomNet and the future of FathomNet, right? Is to create a repository where all of that knowledge can be searched and accessed and shared and also built upon, right? Because how many times have we probably visualized or observed an animal that we haven't described yet? You know, there's all of these, I can go on forever and ever about this, but I really think the only way for this to be successful is if we have a strong community around FathomNet, and that includes taxonomists and computer scientists and enthusiasts and obviously the marine science community. What I'm hoping is that FathomNet will be able to provide that community glue to bring all of these expertise and knowledge and frankly excitement about the ocean in one place.
And I think it may even encourage the next generation. When we're trying to becoming a taxonomic expert, suddenly there's this new version of it where information is coming from all over the world, from sort of autonomous vehicles or things like that. And you are the expert, and pitching that to the next generation is something very exciting. I think there'll be this modern interpretation, tempt people into the field, which is a really meticulous and intimidating field for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's really important for us to figure out mechanisms for us to leverage expertise when it truly is needed. There's a lot of animals that researchers have seen a number of times. There are instances where animals haven't been seen very many times. And so how do you create a discovery pipeline that is efficient and knows when to reach out to the relevant expertise when it's actually needed? And that's all built into this. But what I hope is FathomNet is the first step for us to, you know, essentially be able to build that community. What the data within FathomNet will hopefully enable is the training of algorithms like machine learning or deep learning algorithms that will allow us to automate the processing of underwater visual data. Based on what I know and what I've seen with algorithms, even cutting edge algorithms that are emerging from the CVPRs or the NeurIPS of the world, I don't see artificial intelligence completely replacing people with expertise. But what I do see is an opportunity for us to take some really interesting advancements in technology and potentially creating a bridge between the taxonomic communities and AI, and really enrich and grow the taxonomic community, right? Providing opportunities for training or opportunities for input and collaboration and attribution that did not exist before.
in moving towards, you know, leveraging the power of machine learning, mm-hmm. we are no longer limited by our human senses. At the moment, we're sort of using trichromatic cameras because they mirror our eyes. And so we can look at the images and understand those. But once we embrace this as a method, we can put some, you know, hyperspectral cameras, LIDAR, we can add extra channels of data that an algorithm can interpret just as easily as we look at an image.
That's the hope, right? We'll get there eventually, but really it's this processing bottleneck that is a massive problem. And in order to get to that point of being able to automate that whole process, you need labeled data. And if we're trying to holistically observe, you know, the ocean or biological communities, that requires combining expertise across all these different taxonomic hierarchies to be able to do that. That's the goal of FathomNet.
Every marine scientist listening has folders and folders of data that there just hasn't been the time or the resources to process. So that almost mm-hmm. as this matures, there's so much we could throw at it. Because I'm a fish guy, and I know there's invertebrates hanging around there. I know there's really interesting habitats and sediments in the background as well that I'm not trained and I'm not able to properly interpret. So that there's probably staggering data and firsts in even my old data. This will almost be a single explosion point that radiates future and past, because it's going to unlock right. a lot of our old data as well.
I shouldn't be surprised by, but I've been blown away by, is the fact we've already collected so much data about the ocean. And, you know, I'm reminded with maybe it was the first or second episode on the podcast, you know, the idea that we're always comparing ocean exploration versus space exploration. And mm-hmm. actually, my background's in aerospace engineering, so I could talk about this for ages. But the idea is that we have observed a lot of the ocean. We just don't have a mechanism to share that information really easily. And I don't want to overgeneralize, but this is especially true for visual data or biological information. If we think about the communities that have done amazing, fantastic work in distributed sensing, you know, global scale observations, you've got, you know, obviously satellites and remote sensing, but you also have floats like Argo floats or biogeochemical array, right? So you've got chemical and physical sensing that does phenomenal work. But aside from being able to observe phytoplankton at the near surface, we really haven't scratched the surface very much of scaling biological observations. But we have a ton of data already from individual groups, individual institutions, that if we could put it together, I mean, we'd be an amazing starting point and also a stepping off point for the future. I mean, I'm talking about FathomNet here, and we're also in the process of building the next phase. And this is something I've talked to researchers from all over the world about, is now that we have this labeled data, then how do we create an infrastructure, but also community around processing this data? And that effort's called Ocean Vision AI. The idea being that, can we do something like this where we can combine expertise outside of the ocean sciences, like human-computer interactions or human-AI interactions researchers or video game developers, obviously computer scientists or computer vision experts, but bring all of this expertise together to help address this visual data processing bottleneck. But again, for any of that to be successful, we need something like FathomNet. And so the only way for FathomNet to be successful is if we're able to build a community around it. That's kind of where we're at now. We're trying to get people to take a look, give us input, tell us what they want to see or any ideas for improvement, and then we can go from there. They're trying to promote people contributing back to the community in some way. If you are a marine researcher, obviously you're contributing data with the hope that you'll be able to have these algorithms that then apply to your data. But if you're a computer scientist, we weren't sure, how do we create a mechanism for them to contribute back? And so what we've starting to build is what we're calling a FathomNet model zoo. It's on our GitHub. And what it is it's a place where people who use the FathomNet data and train algorithms, that they can then share them back to the community. And the reason why we want to do this, right, is because computational time isn't the cheapest thing. But we can also start from someone else's algorithms, apply them to our data, correct where there might be inaccuracies, create more labeled data, and then retrain models. And so that iterative process can be sped up so much more if you have models to already start from. This is part of the reason why we have, I think, 3 models now in the Model Zoo. It's derived primarily from Ambari data. But the point being is that anyone can then use those algorithms for their use cases.
These models learn and improve as we go. It becomes a feedback loop. Mm-hmm. Certain things it won't be able to identify. So then you can pass that back to your taxonomic expert, who will then be able to label that data and feed it back into the model, and the model's learning at the same time and improving. Yeah, it's just this brilliant sort of self-sustaining system once we get going.
The other thing that we've been learning a lot from the computer science community, because at the point we've been trying to talk to as many experts as we possibly could. I mean, the way we built FathomNet is it's devoid of any use case or any information for someone outside of the marine science community to know, okay, what are the major challenges? What are the major questions that this data are trying to solve or address? And what that means is one of the things that the FathomNet team is starting to work on is benchmarking particular use cases. So if you want an object detector that will indicate all the different animals that might be in the image, the classification doesn't have to be accurate, but, you know, a bounding box can be drawn around it. You know, that's one particular use case. If you want to study or identify vulnerable marine ecosystems or VMEs, that's a very important use case across a lot of different users we've spoken with. So developing models, either binary, this is a VME or not, or individual groups within or classes within what a definition of VME is, trying to come up with benchmarks for that kind of model is important. And then we have another group member, Eric Orenstein, who's trying to partition the FathomNet data into what we call distribution shifts. You know, the idea that if you train a model in one place, let's say, and you apply it on data that's been collected in another place, the models aren't robust. And this is a problem if it's, you know, data collected in different places, different lighting conditions, different days, different instrumentation. And this is a problem that's known in the terrestrial space as well, and it's not solved. And so by presenting the data or presenting FathomNet as a rich collection of distribution shifts, the goal then would be for us to be able to entice computer scientists and computer vision experts to work on those problems. Where we really want to be able to get to, you know, be able to ID everything in an image that we know, but also call out situations where we come up on something that we don't know or is unknown. And we can do that hopefully soon, but we won't be able to get there if we don't have this information or these data pipelines in place. The other thing we're thinking a lot about with FathomNet is there's kind of this expectation that if you're a taxonomist, you're just going to do this for free. And I don't think that's fair. What we're really trying to figure out within FathomNet is like, how do we create a system of attribution? If you're providing either data or expertise or a label or correction, that information is saved in the database, but also potentially included in like a publication, if we treat databases or data sets equivalent to publications.
With the taxonomy issue, because it is also a group of specialists who are really taken advantage of and almost, you know, through their own passion, help a lot of people out for free, often omitted from grants. And then if there's a couple of emails just almost asking for a favor, it's like, oh, I don't know what this is. There needs to be a way of sort of structuring that. There almost needs to be a tip jar. You don't always know what you're going to find going in. It is hard to write the grant ahead of time, you know, knowing what you're going to find and what taxonomic skills you're going to need. Maybe we need to go almost full digital gig economy. Tick to your taxonomist for answering the question on the email, which at the moment we're pretty bad for just saying thank you and mentioning in the acknowledgements.
We can learn a lot from existing platforms like the iNaturalists of the world, or eBird, which comes out of the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, the ways that they've engaged professional taxonomists, but also a much broader community, because there's a lot of people out there that have expertise. Like, for instance, this live stream oceanographic group that they have watched more ROV footage than pretty much any marine researcher out there. And I know those are fighting words, but the point is like this group has also accumulated so much knowledge. So like, how do we bring them into the fold? So, like, how do we bring people who are enthusiasts into the fold and contribute meaningfully to science? And like, say you have an autonomous vehicle in a place that we haven't visited very often. As this data is coming in, you can have a group of individuals live stream annotating this footage. So what if one of these people noticed something odd or peculiar, or, oh, this is an interesting animal, let me tag it. And the flags are then notifies a lot of other researchers to have them go take a look. And if all the researchers agree, oh, this is odd, this might be something undescribed, then you can bump that observation to the next phase of the process. But because you were the individual that first observed it, we can track that information and you can be added to, let's say, the paper or these talks as a contributor to this whole entire process.
I'm sure this has come across your mind, but like almost gamifying the process.
Oh, absolutely.
The amount of time and energy people say put into Wikipedia, because it's credited and because they're there as an editor and you can see the bits that they contributed. People are amassing this huge repository of human knowledge just for that, because it's visible, it's seen.
I'm glad you brought up gamifying, because that's something we've been thinking a lot about. And in fact, we're working with Gautam Shah, CEO and head of Internet of Elephants, which is a group based out of Kenya that's developed games or gaming experiences around camera trap data. And I think what blew my mind just before the pandemic or during the pandemic was seeing people wandering the streets in my neighborhood looking for Pokemon.
Yes.
Right? Playing Pokemon Go. This was a global international phenomenon. People are literally wandering the streets of their neighborhood looking for fake animals.
And they know the habitat types. They know where they're likely to be. They know what times of day they'll be out.
It's incredible. And this is the thing. It's like, what if some of that energy could be used for literally exploring life that exists on our planet, in our ocean, that we know nothing about? And I think we can do that. I think we can do that.
What would be like a brilliant get to sort of launch the gamifying of this?
I've also had really great conversations with Alan Gershenfeld, who's the developer for, or the mastermind behind Beyond Blue. And one of the things we've been talking about is the marvelization of ocean science. Can we create engagement around scientists or the characters that are involved in this process? And when you think about superheroes, you think about the ocean, I think about Aquaman. And would it be amazing if we were able to have Aquaman, aka Jason Momoa, like be involved in this video game concept, creating opportunities for anyone to participate in ocean exploration and discovery?
Anyone listening is like a distant cousin. can we link these folks up? Because that is something I would absolutely love to see.
I would appreciate it. You never know. It's always worth throwing out there into the universe.
From all of us here, thank you so much for your time. I think we've got so much more to talk about. There are at least two other enormous topics that I think are worthy of their own interviews. So I would love to get you back again in the future when we're not so frantic on time.
I know. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. Please check out FathomNet. It will only be successful if the community participates and contributes. So thank you.
And that was a pressurized version of one of our longer episodes. If you enjoyed that and you would like to hear the full length episode, just match the episode numbers and you'll be able to find the full length version in the feed. Thanks for listening. We'll deep see you next time, and I abyss you already.